heard on great radio stations all across America. It's The National Defense with Randy Miller and Jerry Newberry.
This is The National Defense. Randy Miller, along with Jerry Newberry, Assistant Adjutant General of the VFW. And Jerry, as always, our dedication.
Hey, this show's for you, the men and women serving on active duty, for the millions of veterans out there, and it's for all their families. We're here for you. We love you. God bless you.
All right, we got, these folks have been a part of the VFW convention. They're back again as a sponsor for the fifth year in a row, the Sokolov Law Group, and they're all over the country. I mean, they've been a proud supporter of a lot of veterans' initiatives we'll get into. It's been great to have them as a part of the team.
It is, and I know there are people asking, because we get calls and emails, and wondering what the hell we're doing, Randy.
Yeah.
and I'm
exactly.
Sure some of those people are saying, law firm?
Yeah.
Why? Well, we're going to explain that.
Absolutely. Ricky LeBlanc is here with us. He's the managing attorney of Sokolov Law. Ricky, how are you?
I'm well, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Well, and Ricky, maybe you can explain that the best. Tell me about Sokolov Law and why it should matter to veterans.
And please explain that we're not having you on because I need a ticket fix, because
no.
That's what people are going to assume.
That's right.
Good. I'm glad to hear you don't need a ticket fix, because I'm not sure I can actually help you with that.
You're right.
It's not what we do. Sokolov Law has been involved with the veterans groups for the last 4 or 5 years, 5-plus years, actually. And the reason why we got involved is, as a national personal injury law firm, you may think, well, what do they have to do with veterans? And the reason we got involved is because we represent a great deal of veterans around the country, especially those who were exposed to asbestos during their military careers. And we realized that there was a void out there, that those folks that were exposed to asbestos now have contracted some kind of disease, didn't understand that they had legal rights and they had recourse outside of the VA. To receive compensation for that. And so we try to foremost educate them about the potential they could develop the disease, and try to hope they can prevent it by seeing their doctors, or at least get an early diagnosis or detection for a better outcome. But also to let them know that once we've educated that you should be looking out for this, that if you do contract the disease, that you have rights and you should contact an attorney for that.
Now, asbestos was used everywhere at one time.
Right.
And a lot of guys who served in the military might be thinking, well, I never saw any asbestos. You know, what's this about?
Yeah, well, it's funny you say that, because people think of asbestos as being, sitting in one of those little snow globes, shooken up, and you look around and there's all this white dust all around you. And the truth of the matter is, asbestos fibers are so small, you need an electron microscope to really see them. And so you may have been exposed to asbestos without ever actually ever seen it or even know what it is. We talk about people in the Navy, or Coast Guard, et cetera, that are in ships, Marines that have to be transported on ships, et cetera, that they're in an enclosed environment that has a lot of asbestos that's being wrapped as insulation or used around wiring or gaskets, et cetera. And if you're a machinist, make sure you were around asbestos because you're cutting the stuff all the time. But if you're an electronics mate, you may not realize that the machinist, that's what he's cutting next to you, or that you're being exposed on a daily basis. So they may not realize they were exposed to asbestos, but they were. If you were in a motor pool in one of the other branches and you're doing brake work or clutch work, those oftentimes contained asbestos as well, and if you're blowing the dust out to do repair, et cetera, you get yourself exposed. The part that people kind of forget about or think about is that, but asbestos is something from 20, 30 years ago. Its peak was over 30 years ago. Why do I have to worry about that now? And the problem with that is, with that kind of line of thinking, is that asbestos enters your body 20, 30, 40 years ago, but doesn't actually cause any condition to your body until 30, 40, 50, 60 years later. People can start developing diseases like asbestosis or lung cancer or the signature disease, mesothelioma, which is only known cause, is asbestos exposure.
Yeah, and I can speak to that personally. We're talking to Ricky LeBlanc. He's the managing attorney of Sokolov Law. And Ricky, I can really attest to that. A good friend of mine died of mesothelioma a year and a half ago, and he had no indication all of his life that he had asbestos contamination until it showed up at the age of 42. And I mean, that it was the worst fastest moving condition I've ever seen in anyone, and it was just a sad situation. But you're right; he had no idea, and his came from automotive. So it exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's why we try to provide veterans, whether it be at the conventions or at various posts, et cetera. We try to provide them with information about early warning signs, because although if you've got the asbestos exposure and you develop a cancer or asbestosis, mesothelioma, that there is nothing we can do about stopping it from happening because the exposure was so long ago. But
sure,
what we can do is arm people with the knowledge of what to look for. That low back pain may not be because you were cleaning the gutters on your home or you were painting or doing work around the house. That lower back pain may be a symptom of something else. If you have coughing, don't presume it's pneumonia, and don't presume your doctor has any idea that you were exposed to asbestos.
Right.
And so we always tell people that when you're going to see your doctor, whether it be at the VA or in private practice, and you start telling you've got a cough or pneumonia, or that's the diagnosis he gives you, make sure you let him know that, listen, I might have been exposed to asbestos. Does that change anything in your opinion, doc? Because now they're going to start looking differently, and they may overlook something if they didn't know that there was asbestos exposure. And quite honestly, not every doctor understands occupations and what people did in the service, and may not understand that they may have been exposed to asbestos.
And this isn't limited to Navy personnel or Marines who were on board ships. It could be someone conceivably who spent time in one of those old barracks.
Yeah, I mean, it's when you're talking about barracks, I mean, any barrack that was built, especially like most of them were in the 1940s for World War II, and they continued to use them all the way through Vietnam and then some, when you're talking about barracks, you've got pipe insulation in them, you have the actual asbestos siding outside, the shingles on the roof, the gypsum board that they used on the walls, the mud they used to cover it, which we call mud, or whatever you want to call the spackling type product that goes over the top. The joint compound is technically what it is, all of those things have it. Now, most of them are, if they're not disturbed, they're not emitting a great deal of asbestos. But when you're talking about something that's been sitting there for sometimes 20, 30, 40 years, it's disturbed. It's been moved around. It's started to disintegrate, and the dust is in the air. So it could be those people as well. But even outside of the housing, when you start talking about other branches of the military besides the Navy, it doesn't mean that the Army doesn't have a boiler that needs to be fixed. It doesn't mean that the Air Force doesn't have brakes on aircraft. It doesn't mean that, that whether you're in the Coast Guard, you have smaller ships, but you still have the same exposure, and whether or not you're in the Marine Corps and you're in the motor pool, or you're a tech that's working on aircraft for the Marines, you've got various component parts that also contained asbestos for many years.
There has been money that has been allocated and set aside, an estimated $30 billion in court-ordered trusts set aside by many manufacturers for victims and their families already, right?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, this is one of the things that I wanted to get into. But before I get into that number, let me just talk about people in the service. We talk about no matter what branch of the service is. We all know, especially enlisted men, go into the service, they learn a trade. And that trade, they long after they leave the military, they're going to use in civilian life.
Sure.
If you were a machinist mate, you may become a HVAC guy or plumber. If you're a boiler technician, you're going to do that in both sides. If you're a mechanic at the in the motor pool, you're going to also go off probably a mechanic later in life. So veterans' exposure may continue long after their service.
Right.
But there's also it's not limited to just this service. And I just want to make sure people understand that we're not just looking at people who are exposed in the service, but they might have been continually exposed. Now, what you had mentioned, I think, is very important. The $30 billion estimate you may hear in television commercials, you may have seen in magazines, et cetera, is a money that has been put into trust for asbestos victims. Now, what that really means is companies try not to make the payment, or say they can't afford to make the payments, to all the victims that they may have caused. So their answer is they go to the bankruptcy court, just like anybody else would, that can't pay all their bills, so they have to go to the bankruptcy court and try to get protection. And so they file for bankruptcy, and the court said, well, wait a minute, you have a lot of money. You can't just walk away from all these people, so we're going to order you to put some money aside in a trust for anybody in the future that has a claim. You have to pay everybody that you already know is sick, but then anybody in the future you have to put money aside for. And over the years, starting with the Johns Manville Trust, money continues to be put into these various trusts. There's going to be a few more probably put online this year, meaning more money is going to be put into it again this year. And that number over the years has accumulated to being well over $30 billion by most estimates, and is going to continue to grow as other companies decide to look for protection from the bankruptcy. So, you know, victims of asbestos disease have a right to make claims against that money. It's been set aside for them. And if you can establish that you have an asbestos-related disease and you're exposed to one of the products that have this trust, then you're entitled to compensation.
And what that trust means, the fact that the court set up these trusts, is that that they must have found that the companies were liable or they had culpability in not only producing the product but distributing it. And what else? They in fact tried to hide this, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, it's very clear in the evidence that many companies knew that asbestos exposure was going to be deadly, and they knew it for years, and they hid it from the United States government. So that's why they kept selling the products to the government to put into their ships and trucks, et cetera.
Nice.
And they hid it from the average worker who was working around it, and as a result. What these companies did when they set these trusts up is they go to the bankruptcy court and said, boy, I've done all of these things, and these people are claiming I did it, and if I'm found responsible for this stuff, I'm going to go broke, so I need you to protect me. And so then what the court said is, well, how much were you paying people before when you were settling cases? And so that's how they determine how much money should go into trust, is based on how much did I pay people before that I guess I agreed I was responsible for the disease, or I probably didn't agree to it, but I still paid them. And so they say, well, how much did you pay those people? And then on average, that's what you should be paying all the people in the future. So you should put money aside to do that. And, not to get too technical, but the business says, well, I can't afford to pay everybody the same thing I paid in the past. That's why I'm broke. And so I can pay everybody a percentage. And so that's what they put aside, and the judge tries to figure out what their liability is going to be in the future for all the people who haven't gotten sick yet. And that's how much money they try to order them to put into a trust, or as much of that money as they can.
Well, and I think you said something else important, Ricky, about they've got the money in trust. They still don't want you to get it. So, I mean, you need somebody.
Yeah, it's not like they're just...
That's right. Yeah. I mean, that's why Ricky...
And I'm willing to bet that these company executives that knew they were poisoning people and killing people...
Devious.
I bet none of them went to jail.
Exactly.
In fact, it's funny. If you look in the 1980s, and you start looking when Mansfield first was going bankrupt, and you start looking at news articles back then and the letters to the editors and those things, there were people that were defending a company like Johns Manville, who was the largest producer for asbestos-containing products in the world. And they were defending him, saying, well, geez, you're going to put these people out of business, and that's going to lose thousands and thousands of jobs. These bad tort lawyers are taking them and putting them out of business and making all these people lose their jobs. And I always found that humorous when I read it, because if somebody was doing something in your neighborhood that was harming the people in your neighborhood, and the police came and arrested him and stopped him from doing it, even if he employed 50 or 60 other people that helped him harm the people in your neighborhood, you wouldn't say the police didn't do the right thing. You'd say they're doing you'd say, of course they should arrest this guy. I always akin it to drug dealers, right? If a drug dealer has a bunch of runners and now they're all out of business because the police took down the drug runners, does somebody write a letter to the editor saying, these guys don't have any jobs anymore, they used to run this guy's drugs and he took them out of business? And it's like somehow we get looked at, tort lawyers, plaintiff's lawyers, get looked at like we're doing something wrong.
Not on this program. Not on this program, Ricky.
I appreciate it.
Hey, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to talk to Ricky about some of the veterans outreach programs that you have at Sokolov Law. We'll be right back here on the National Defense. Welcome back to National Defense. It's Randy Miller and Jerry Newberry, and Ricky LeBlanc is our guest right here from the Sokolov Law. He's the managing attorney. They're a personal law injury law firm, works on a variety of case types, a focus on asbestos that we've documented here in the last segment. And Ricky, let me ask you about your veterans outreach program. I know that you guys have certainly supported the VFW here in the past few years. The fifth year in a row as a sponsor of the national convention. You'll be back again this year in St. Louis. And I guess a lot of people may not know about your outreach program.
Yeah, thanks, guys, for having me on again. But I want to talk about that outreach program. It's what we talked about earlier in this program, and that is that Sokolov Law determined a few years ago that veterans made up a large part of the people exposed to asbestos in the past, and they just didn't understand their rights. And it was, we do our best to advertise through television commercials, but you can't do much in 30 seconds on television. So what we decided to do was let's go to this group and try to arm them with some information that will hopefully give them an early diagnosis and give them a better chance at their survival with things like asbestosis or lung cancer. And so we developed a program to go and reach out to veterans, and the easiest way to do that, of course, was to go where they all are. And so you folks at the VFW represent quite a few veterans, and so we decided let's support a group like the VFW. And so we've been doing so for about the last 5 years. We're back in St. Louis, as you said, and our program, while we're at the convention, our program there is to hand out literature to inform veterans so they have things in their hands. I talk to people about potential claims, and that's what they want to talk about when they're there. We also give a presentation on early warning signs while at the convention. We do that also around the country at other meetings that the VFW may have in districts and or even a large large hall somewhere that may want to bring us in at their post. So, we've been trying to do so is, again, to arm, it's really just arm people with information, and that they have legal rights, they have right to compensation, and that they have, a way to try to fight this by getting early detection. Now, we do this through veterans themselves. And that is that I made a commitment a few years ago to, if we're going to go and we realize that veterans need help, then let's do it with veterans. And so we brought on board Robert O'Donnell, who's been a friend of mine for some nearly 30 years, and he is a Vietnam-era veteran. He was in the Navy from 66 to 69 and served in Vietnam. We also have a Marine who's the kind of the next generation, right? We have a Marine that is a case manager in my asbestos group who works with these veterans on their cases on a daily basis. And he is he was in the Marine Corps 2001, 2005. He's an Iraq veteran. And when I first established the team about 5 years ago, I had a Marine then who held that same position. And he's he was a great asset, and so I continue to try to build a team with veterans. I have some reservists in the Army here. It's what we try to do here at Sokolov is that we understand that our returning veterans, they need jobs, et cetera. So if we can hire them, we try to do that. And then they're also the natural to help us reach out to veterans that had exposure maybe 30, 40, or 50 years ago, whether it be World War II, Korea, Vietnam, beyond, and explain to them they have rights.
Ricky, listen, thanks again for what you guys do at Sokolov Law, and we look forward to seeing you at convention and discussing further about what you guys can do for veterans.
Great. Thanks for having me on, Randy and Jerry. And, of course, anybody that's out there listening, and you folks, and you too as well, can stop by and visit us at our booth. We'll be at booth 718 at the convention in St. Louis. And we'll also be giving some presentations in room 121. So anybody wants to stop by and meet us can certainly do that. And I want to thank you two and all of your listeners for their service here at Sokolov Law. We appreciate it.
Is there a website for more information, too, Ricky, that people could go to?
Sure. Anybody can go to sokoloflaw.com, which is our website, to get more information about us. And quite frankly, if they want to talk to our Marine, Andrew, who's my case manager, sits right outside my door, they can give him a call or me a call at 1-800-891-9000. 1969, and any of your listeners want to get any more information, they can certainly feel free to call that number, and I'm willing to talk to them. That's 800-891-1969.
Get Andrew a chair, will you? I mean, don't make him sit right outside the door. Hey, Ricky,
give him a chair outside the door.
Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, guys. I'll see you in St. Louis.
We'll be right back here on the National Defense.